Good morning, counsel. I will now call the fourth and final case on today's oral argument calendar for this panel. It is case number A23-571, State of Minnesota versus Paul Scott Seaman. I believe counsel are familiar with our usual procedures, which are more or less the same on the Zoom format. You should be able to see a time clock on one of your somewhere on your screen, if you have the right settings. And so, counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Sean McCarthy. I'm an assistant Rice County attorney. I appear today on behalf of appellant, the state of Minnesota. Before I proceed with my argument, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I've never been appellant on Zoom before, so normally I'd go talk to your clerk about that. My apologies for the informality, but I want to make sure I cover that properly.
You
Is there
will
anything else I
have
need to do?
no, you will have 5 minutes to rebuttal automatically. You also have 15 minutes for your principal argument.
Thank you, Your Honors. With the panel's permission, then I would like to proceed.
Mr. McCarthy, you are muted now. We could hear you
There we
earlier.
go.
Okay, please.
Sorry
Okay,
about that.
you may begin.
Don't drop things on the space bar. The issue in this case is lack of fair notice. As attorneys and judges, you have all experienced this. You're in the middle of the hearing. You finish your part of the argument. You think you got everything laid out. The other side starts, and the issue changes. That's what happened in this case. The affidavits filed by the respondent when he was pro se, his two affidavits raised multiple legal challenges to whether he was legally entitled or whether restitution was legally entitled. He did not challenge specific dollar amounts. Because of that, the change which happened, and by the way, this is the key here is the essential portion of the transcript here is pages 60 through about pages 70. If you want to go back at some point, that's where this happened. You can see it happen. The issue goes from legal challenges to dollar amount challenges.
Mr.
That's the heart of
McCarthy,
this.
Mr. McCarthy, let me drill down on one particular component or item of restitution on your point about whether or not there was a question about value. So I'm looking at your addendum, page 13, just to, for your benefit and respondents' counsel's benefit to focus you. And I'm looking at paragraph 9. Tell me.
Yes.
Okay, so Mr. Seaman said in his affidavit that, referring first to a dollar request for $12,300, he says defendant was convicted of receiving the motor from the truck, which was valued at $2,500. Additionally, the motor was returned, so Mr. Pumper has suffered no loss. So why is that not a challenge to the amount of restitution?
The key here, Your Honor, I'm going to call this offset. There are three claims, and I will highlight them for you. They're the trial court's order. If you're a note-taking person, this is your moment to shine. Trial court's order 1B, as in boy, 1E, as in echo, 1H, as in Harold. Those are the three where the defendant did raise some kind of an offset type argument that, gee, I was convicted of stealing this, but they got that back, or I was convicted of this, but I wasn't convicted of that. He's kind of a causality intermixed with, shouldn't some of that come back? The problem with the one that the court just asked about, Judge Johnson, is the motor involved. They got the motor, they didn't get the truck. And therefore, the truck was part of what was the racketeering offense he was convicted of. By finding the motor, they knew he stole the truck. And therefore, the causation is connected to the racketeering. And in terms of the motor being returned, the motor's still in evidence. That was argued 3 pages later on about page 62 or 63 of the brief by the county attorney handling the case.
Well, it sounds like you're giving me your responsive argument to that objection to the restitution claim, but I guess isn't that a matter of amount? And in other words, The claim was for 12,300. Defendant said perhaps the item received was only 2,500, but in the end, zero. But these are all about amounts, right?
No. And the reason, Your Honor, with all due respect, that 2,000 he's talking about, he's not saying the truck is worth only 2,000. He's saying the only thing they caught me with was a motor, and the motor alone is worth 2,000. He was convicted of racketeering. That racketeering was stealing vehicles, selling off the parts and bits and pieces. They found him with the motor. He was convicted of possession of the motor, but the racketeering was theft of the truck. The entire truck is the restitution claim. The dollar amount of the motor, he's trying to offset by saying, well, you can't give me restitution for the whole thing. That's a legal claim about I didn't cause the disappearance of the whole truck. I only had the motor.
So
I'm trying to parse that quite a bit.
Okay, let me switch to a slightly different topic. Then you mentioned cause or causation. Why is, let's, because there are some, clearly two paragraphs up, paragraph seven, I think, where there's $880, he states defendant was not found guilty of breaking a lock, breaking glass, or breaking a seat. So that, I think you and I would agree that implicates the issue of causation.
Yes.
And so why do you call that a legal argument? And I'm wondering why and why that's consequential and why the burden was not shifted to the state to prove that there was that this amount exists as a result of his crime.
He was convicted of racketeering. Complex organization, took three trials over 8 years, stealing vehicles all across Minnesota and even in other states. The theft that occurred, and this is well developed in the earlier trial record, but the theft that occurred from Rainbow Play Systems was they broke in. They broke a lock on the gate to get inside. They broke a seat on a different item trying to get that item out. And they broke some glass as part of that. And they stole items from Rainbow Play Systems. Rainbow Play Systems requested restitution for the things broken to accomplish the theft. Does that help answer the court's causation thought?
Well, I maybe asked you a compound question, but I guess you're referring to causation as a legal argument. Why is that a legal argument rather than something, a different type of argument?
Your Honor, you could call it legal or factual, but what I'm getting at is in parsing out what he gave notice of, the defendant's challenge to Rainbow Play Systems, and read directly from the defendant's affidavait.
Well,
he
okay,
says, I was found not guilty of breaking a lock, breaking glass, or breaking a seat. That's correct. He was not found guilty of doing those things. He was found guilty of stealing items from Rainbow Play System, and those were things he caused or damaged in the course of stealing them. That's what I mean by causation. The victim suffered loss because of what he did.
And why? So why is that statement in paragraph seven, which we'll agree is a statement about causation, why does that not shift the burden to the state to prove that there was causation? Yeah.
Under Thole, he needs to plead both. He has the burden of pleading and production. His pleading there was with regard to the causation element, not to the damages element. The trial court said, you didn't show me enough to show how much this was worth. That's why the trial court rejected it.
But wait, is there any case law that you rely on to say that the issue of causation is not an issue for which the burden can be shifted to the state?
I agree. Causation can be shifted to the state. It wasn't here or in the other claims because he didn't lay out the dollar amounts he was challenging. He just said his basic arguments were, number one, I didn't steal this particular thing, therefore it's not my fault to pay restitution.
But if it's a legal argument, though, you had the chance to contest it. I mean, right? You're not arguing about that. You could say, no, there is causation, Your Honor, because of X, Y, Z. So
and
you didn't need advance notice. I mean, I think it, you know, depending on how we read it, but I mean, am I wrong? You're not arguing that you needed more notice of the legal issues. I mean,
Your Honor is correct. It's the
okay.
legal and the factual are intermixed here. In particular, we had eight different victims. The eight different claims that are at stake in this appeal include victims from multiple different states, multiple different locations. To establish additional factual detail about how much something was worth or what was damaged in a particular way, defendant needed to specifically establish that. I will concede. Remember, I gave you that note-taking moment, paragraphs 1B, 1E, and 1H? Those three, the defendant at least made some claim that there's something here that should be offset. The five remaining claims, 1D, F, I, J, and K, those five claims, there is no challenge to any kind of offset or dollar amount whatsoever. At a minimum, those five should be reversed because the trial court essentially voided the controlling statute 611A.045 sub 3 and allowed defendant to change the issue on those five claims.
Okay, so for example, H is restitution to JM Truck and Equipment. And there you acknowledge that when he said in his affidavit that the return truck exceeds the value of the claim loss, that's adequate notice. Is that correct?
I don't really want to, go there, but I think for sure the most fair result is to remand to ask the court to reopen and develop the record on those three claims. Alternatively, the
Wait,
court
on
could.
which? Okay, so not being somebody who circled the ones that you thought should be remanded, can you go through your list again?
Sure. Your Honor's
Let me get
the
to the court's order here. Okay, go
All right.
ahead.
In fairness, the three claims where there was at least arguably some challenge about value or offset are 1B as in boy, E as in Edward, H as in Harold.
Okay,
Those three, I
that's
will
what I thought
concede, he
you'd
raised at
said.
least something about value in those. Whether
Okay.
it was fairly raised enough for the state to know it needed to bring witnesses and further develop, that I would argue is not clear from the way in which it was developed. And that's part of why, Judge Johnson, you asked that very appropriate question about the Cory Pumper issue. Cory Pumper is one of the ones I flagged. It looks on its face like he's talking about value, but what he's really saying is, oh, you can't charge me for the whole truck. You only caught me with the motor. He was also convicted of theft of the truck and the rather, sorry, convicted of racketeering, which was the action of stealing multiple vehicles to sell them off for parts. He sold off the rest of the truck.
Can I clarify? So those three, B, E, and H, you're now, I mean, I think you're making a change of your position since your briefing. Am I correct? You argued in your briefing, you challenged eight components or eight items in your brief, and now you're reducing it to five. Am I correct in understanding that?
I am conceding that if this court feels those three that I mentioned are sufficiently raised to be fair notice, then this court could do that. I don't think they're sufficiently raised, but since you all started asking specific questions, let's parse it right down and get to the heart of it. Those three are the only three that even raise anything about dollar amounts or value.
Why not K, which is paragraph 15 of the affidavit? You
K
have.
is the a $91,000 truck that was never found, but he was nonetheless convicted of racketeering, and the theft of that truck was part of his racketeering conviction.
So going back to K, what should have been included to raise a question about the remainder of the 91,000 other than the $2,000.
They found him with some stolen doors that were from the truck. He claimed that that's the only thing he should be responsible for was the doors they found him with. But the charge of racketeering, it's not a very common offense. How often do you all see racketeering as an offense before this court? Not that often. There's not a lot of case law on it. The charge of racketeering is the process, the overall organizational strategy and process of stealing stuff and then selling it off for profit, at least as applied in this case. He was convicted of the racketeering. The loss of the truck is the loss that the victim suffered, not just the loss of the doors.
So in your Sorry, can I ask another question, Judge Johnson? We're
Well,
short on time.
no, of course, please do. Yep.
On the $91,000, in your view, what issue is being raised by that paragraph or issues?
He's basically trying to claim you didn't prove that I stole the truck worth $91,000. You only proved that I possessed some stolen doors. The problem with that
so
is
your interpretation is his argument goes to what was proven at trial, not the value of the truck itself.
Correct. Nowhere does he dispute or challenge the value of the truck. He's challenging it. And actually, that's what I meant by offset. He's really saying you only caught me with something, not the whole thing, some smaller part of the whole. I should only pay for the smaller part, not the cost of the whole. But he was convicted at trial of racketeering in a process that involved all of those.
Would you characterize that as an issue of causation?
It does appear to be similar now that I look at it. But again, this was distinct because they never actually got the whole truck. And he was convicted of the doors, but the doors came from the truck, and the victim's affidavit established, here's the value of the truck. That's the statement, it's burden in that sense.
And your complaint about the affidavit from respondent is that it doesn't say, and the truck is not worth $91,000, or there's no adequate evidence that it's not worth $91,000.
That's correct. Nowhere in the affidavit is there any challenge to the dollar amounts of the item that was claimed. He just kind of says, hey, they got that motor back, or they got these doors, and that's the only thing that was there. That's a different issue than saying that truck's not worth $91,000. Very different issues, different proof. Think about it. How would you prove it up at court? If you didn't know, I better bring in some kind of an insurance estimate or some kind of a pricing or a witness to talk about it. Without notice, you don't have a fair chance to bring those things in. And that's why pages 60 through 70 in the transcript show the issue changed when he started talking about nitpicking dollar amounts instead of overall legal causation.
But isn't, you just said there's no dispute about the amount of the claim, I think. Taking the claim, narrowly, I think I can understand that. But wasn't he challenging the amount of the requested item, which was, I think the restitution claim was for $91,000. He's disputing the amount of that item. Isn't that a dispute about the amount?
If you want to play with the word amount, yes. But if you want to play with what is he putting the state on fair notice of, he wasn't saying this truck isn't worth $91,000. He was only saying, I only got convicted of possession of $2,000 worth of truck doors, not the whole truck. I would argue that's a legal argument to some degree, but if he's getting into a factual argument about the value of the truck, that's the part where, there's no notice here that he's challenging the value of the overall truck.
Well,
he's not challenging that. In fact, he even goes on to say, also, I'm incarcerated and I don't have the ability to pay. Those are his arguments.
Yeah, I don't have a question about that right now, but isn't he basically isn't he challenging the claimant's out-of-pocket loss, or their, by saying that they lost only $2,000, not $91,000?
He's not saying that, Your Honor. Nowhere in his affidavit does it say that. What he says is, I was convicted of $2,000 of doors. The logical import of that is, I was not convicted of stealing a truck worth $91,000, but he was. He was convicted of racketeering. The truck was proven as one of the stolen items that was part of the racketeering enterprise. It just so happened he disposed of most of the evidence, but for the doors, prior to getting caught.
You will have, your time has expired, but you will have an opportunity for rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for respondent, please introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Roy Spurbeck. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the respondent, Scott Seaman. I think at its core, this case is about the trial court finding that respondent complied with the notice provisions of the statute, putting the state to its burden of proof, and the state then failing to carry its burden. Because that finding is not clearly erroneous and the court didn't otherwise abuse its discretion, the court's order should be affirmed. No one, and I want to be fair because I see all the prosecutors are watching the argument, no one knows more about this case than this trial judge. There are multiple trials because the 40 odd counts are severed. The racketeering trial, I think, lasts about a month. She's very familiar with the record. She's very familiar with the parties. I think when you look at the sentencing transcript and the restitution hearing transcript, you see a judge who has read everything, a judge who is actively asking questions, a judge who is clarifying the restitution amounts. When the state, Mr. McCarthy makes reference to the state saying, whoa, maybe the argument's changing. The judge doesn't ignore that. She asks, she gets a more specific answer from the state, and then she rules. And so this isn't a case where you just have sort of a blasé, the record really doesn't show that anyone's paying attention. This judge is paying attention. This judge has read everything. And this judge thought the notice was adequate. In her written order and orally, the judge says, the judge finds that the respondent, quote, challenged, quote, a number of the specific restitution rewards, quote, believe that this puts the county to the burden of proof. That sure sounds like me that the judge found it was adequate. It's not clearly erroneous. And I think if you look at the, if you look at the case law that we have on this, does not require much to put restitution at issue and for the state to require to carry its burden. This court has said the detail is not high. Palablicki, which is cited in my brief, all the defendant in Palablicki said was, quote, not allowable. When the, you know, so there's a restitution request, defendant says, quote, not allowable. Supreme Court in Palablicki said, boy, that's not much, but it's good enough. So I think when you look at Mr. Seaman's affidavits, they're better than Palablicki. Now, some very specific stuff that came up during the state's argument and questions from Judge Johnson. When I look at these objections in the first affidavit, seems to me there's a mix of things going on here. There is a legal argument such as, and here's what I consider a legal argument. Insurance companies can't get restitution as a matter of law. That's a legal argument. You actually don't need to make that kind of objection in an affidavit because it's not a dispute about the monetary amount or the kind of restitution. It's a legal amount. It's a legal argument. And I think State versus Gavnik, I should remember the name of the case, I'm Gavnik's lawyer, makes real clear that legal arguments don't need objections, don't need this kind of objection in detail, but they're in there. So you've got legal arguments, you've got what Judge Johnson identified as causation, which the Supreme Court case is State versus Botcher, it's an arson case that was decided in 2019, which requires this very more close factual relationship between the crime and the restitution requested. This court in numerous unpublished opinions has said, the Botcher objection needs to be in the affidavit. So what we have here for Mr. Seaman is we have legal objections, we have factual objections, and then we have what I think is the more traditional objection of, I disagree with the amount.
Mr. Spurbeck, I'd like you to pause right there. Those, you mentioned non-precedential opinions applying Betcher or Botcher in the context of this, the defendant's burden in the affidavit. Are those cited in your brief?
You know, no, Your Honor, I just kind of thought of them while Mr. McCarthy was talking. The reason I'm familiar with them is because I've lost the issue.
And do you have citations at your fingertips?
I can tell you the case I lost. It's State versus Kingbird, and it's decided probably in very late 2022. And I think after the argument, I can send you a letter giving you the exact citation I'm thinking of.
I think it would be an appropriate subject for supplemental authorities if they exist.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think one of the things that when you try to raise the Botcher causation, you run into a couple of problems. You run into the, does it need, you have to comply with all the restitution rules. You run into the second problem of just sort of general plain error arguments, but I think they've are kind of com been combined. So when I look at the affidavit, when I look at the affidavit, to me, the clearest objections are 5, 9, 12, and 15, those paragraphs. And I think those are the ones that the court has identified. But to me, those are very clear objections to amounts. And I know that the state, I think, I don't want to say concede, Mr. McCarthy, I don't mean that, but the state recognizes that, yeah, some of these are better and some of them are not. I think some of them are better too, honestly. But I
So,
think.
with regard to paragraph 15, how is that a clear objection to the full 91,000, the value of the truck? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
When you
well, I
say
think
it's a clear objection to the amount,
I well.
I guess I see the objection being that defendant was only convicted of stealing the doors, which were valued at 2,000, and
Yeah.
implying that there's no, therefore, there's no basis for awarding anything more than 2,000. Further, restitution should not be awarded because defendant is incarcerated and does not have the ability to pay. So, where are
Again.
you seeing a challenge to the value of the entire truck at 91,000 being inaccurate?
I guess because the defendant is just flat out contesting the value. So when he says 2,000, that seems to me to bring into question 91,000. I know if you look at the restitution hearing transcript, it's page 59 of the restitution hearing transcript. I will say that defense, or I guess it'd be defense counsel at a restitution hearing. I will say defense counsel is real concerned about paragraph 15. And I think going off of the defendant's affidavit, I think the things that are kind of concerning about number 15, when you go back and look at the request for restitution, it's a undated affidavit. It doesn't have a lot of detail about the insurance part of it. It says there's an insurance policy. It says there's a claim number, but it leaves out exactly what happens with that. So I know one of the things that's triggering the defense argument at the restitution hearing is, they think it's enough, but then there are some other things that I think are causing some suspicion on the defense side about what the loss is here. And I think at one point defense counsel wonders if there's sort of a windfall going on where maybe the person got the insurance money. We just don't know. I think, but if you kind of wheel back a little bit of when we look at this affidavit and these paragraphs, I don't think it's a de novo review of the paragraphs. I think that what you're looking at is a trial judge very familiar with the case, looked at these, thought they were adequate. I don't think that's clear error. I don't think it's an abuse of discretion. Now, I have been the appellant many, many, many times, as I think you all know. I think you all know, where I work and what I do. And I, as appellant, a lot of times want to make things legal issues. I try to take that, whatever happened at that trial, and say the review is de novo because I think I'll have a better shot. I know that's what's going on here for the state. They want to turn this into as much of a legal claim as they can because they don't want you to have to defer to the trial judge. Because if you defer to the trial judge, there's not error here. So I think it's very important to really separate out, is this a legal claim? Or is it really more something abuse of discretion, clear error? And I think
But
when you look.
whether the affidavit satisfies the statute, that's a legal question, right? That's de novo.
I disagree. I think what's de novo there is that the statute requires an affidavit. The substance of the affidavit itself is reviewed more deferentially because the judge in this case very clearly from the record has looked at that affidavit. And I was.
Undetermined. So what your argument is that where it says in the amount of 91,000 that the judge, concluded that that was adequate to put that satisfied notice to the state of the challenge of the amount of the, I mean, the value of the truck. Is
Absolutely.
that your argument? Yeah.
Yeah. That I think
Okay.
that
All right.
the
Okay.
different paragraphs satisfy the notice requirement. That I think is the review there is more deferential. There's a couple things going on here on this idea of the state's argument for remand. You know, I would say first, one of the things that the state did not do in the trial court was ask for a continuance. They don't ask for the record to be kept open. And I think there's a little bit going on in the state's principal brief of, well, maybe that should have happened. Yeah, but the state didn't ask for it to happen in the trial court. And I don't know that really they can ask for that remedy now. The way that I understood the original request for the state was either to vacate and award all the restitution. That seems extremely unfair to the defendant who went to a hearing and thought his objections were adequate. So I don't think that can be the remedy. I think the court can affirm the order because I don't think it's an abuse of discretion. Beyond that, I think if you were going to remand the case, it certainly wouldn't be on all of these things because, like I said, I think a lot of these objections are fine. You know, even under de novo review, they're adequate. So that doesn't quite seem right. So, you know, I guess for just to sum up on the respondent side here is we're going to ask you to affirm the trial court. I don't think there's an abuse of discretion here. You know, if you are going to remand it, I don't think it can just be to order the restitution as a matter of fairness. And if you were going to remand it, I think you're going to have to look real close to see what would be what you could remain, what you think is not adequately noticed. If you remanded those, then I think it's got to be for a full hearing, not just the sort of awarding. So I don't think there are any more questions. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Spurbeck. Mr. McCarthy, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. And if I could at the outset, I mean, I think our discussion has been focused on the word amount, and I want to just remind you of this. The statute says dot dot dot. The offender shall have the burden to produce evidence if the offender intends to challenge, and I think there's three things here in a series. One, the amount of restitution, or I'll insert two, specific items of restitution, or I'll insert three, their dollar amounts. The amount of restitution, or specific items of restitution, or their dollar amounts. So, I mean, why is it not sufficient simply for the defendant to put in an affidavit that challenges specific items of restitution and therefore shift the burden to the state?
I think Mr. Spurbeck said it really well. As you read through the defendant's affidavit, some paragraphs are better than others. Some more clearly raise specific challenges, and some do not at all. The do not at all are the paragraphs we spent a lot of time focusing on, the ones where he raised some kind of an offset or some kind of a dollar amount challenge. The ones that do not at all, 1D, F, I, J, and I'll put K in there as kind of its own special category. That's the $91,000 truck issue. Judge Cochran did a nice job of highlighting. Where does that say he challenges that the truck was worth $90,000? Isn't he really challenging just the $2,000 from the doors? There's a legitimate question there for this court to decide. In terms of remedy, I would suggest that Mr. Spurbeck hit on the head there that the easy out is just to affirm and not really think it through. But based on this panel's own questions, we kind of need to think through each one of these. So one option you could do is remand for the district court to reopen restitution as it feels appropriate for the whole case or not. Another option, a more intermediate resolution, would be remand to reopen for the things where it was kind of vaguely raised but not fairly raised. Third option might be to remand, reverse on the ones where it wasn't raised at all, but remand for the ones fairly raised. You have lots of choices in front of you here. And the key is because some of these paragraphs raise it better than others, it's apparent that the judge, she got what we called in our office semen fatigue. This case went on for 8 years, three separate trials, plus a separate contested restitution trial. One way you can read it is, wow, he kind of raised that here. Well, I'm going to apply the same rationale to all claims of restitution, which, when you read the judge's order, eight of these got reduced to zero. Right? Sorry, I think 7 to 0, 1 to $500. that application kind of blindly without looking at what was specifically raised, that's where the flaw in here lies, because at least those particular victims for where the issue was not raised at all, they're completely deprived of their day in court, let alone the restitution that they arguably are entitled to. I'd ask the court to not affirm outright. In fact, the court has room to reverse outright, or alternatively, kind of go down the middle and reverse some claims and affirm some claims. I leave it to the court's discretion.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days. This is the final case on today's oral argument calendar, so we will be adjourned.
Normally